Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I'm delighted to welcome author and speaker Kamanzi Constable to the show. Kamanzi found himself in the position that so many of us do during our lifetimes. Excuse me. He was not living the life of his dreams. He was working in a job that he absolutely hated, and every single day he dreamed of quitting that job. But like so many of us, he dreaded losing a steady income and really just couldn't imagine what life would be like for himself and his family without the perceived stability of a regular paycheck. We also know now that there is no real stability with that, so sometimes you should just jump out and live your dreams. Kamanzi was also battling weight issues and, in fact, lost 132 pounds in just 8 months, which is phenomenal all by itself. But he put it all back on again, plus some. He was living in a state, Wisconsin, that is cold and longs for warmer climates. So one day he just had enough and began living the life that he crafted for himself and for his family. And I am going to let him tell you that story. So welcome, Kamanzi. I know you have a very busy day today. You've got another interview a little bit after this one. And I'm so glad to have you here with us now.
Well, thanks for having me, Denise. I really enjoy the show, and I enjoy the format of the show. And it's you make it sound very nice and appealing.
Well, you know, I get to talk to the greatest people. You know, that's what my show is all about. You know, like we were talking in our virtual green room, my purpose for this show is to kind of bring information about people that we may follow on Facebook or through social media or read their books, or, you know, we're aware of them and we admire their work. You know, we really wonder how in the heck they did it. And this show is really about that. How in the heck did you do it? What prompted you? You know, what kind of got you off of that, you know, seat, if you will, you know, that office seat? Or, you know, how do you do it? Because people just, they need the inspiration. They need the motivation. And these are scary times. So this show really does aim to help people do what you do, if that makes any sense.
No, we need a lot more of that, though.
I agree. Well, listen, before we get too deep into the interview and all the questions I have, can you tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and where they can find you on the web?
You can find me at KamanziConstable.com. That's KimanziConstable. Or you could go to TalesOfWork.com and you'll be redirected. But, you know, that's my home. That's where I write, and then on the top of the website, you'll find, like, all the social media links. And if you want to connect or have questions or, you know, yell at me or whatever, you can click on a link and do it there.
I don't let people yell at me. You're a nicer person than I am. I just say, yeah. Listen, I was looking at your blog yesterday. Let's talk really quickly about that just a bit, because Tales of Work, to me, is a fascinating title. How did you come up with that?
It was based off of the first book that I wrote. The first book I wrote was called Tales of the Everyday Working Man and Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to just write about, specifically about work. And so I think I had picked one other title, like work. It might have been like work.com or something very generic like that. And it was taken. And so as I thought about, you know, what I want this site to be about, you know, I want to share people's stories about work, and so Tales of Work just kind of, it kind of fit.
Right. Well, I was reading some of your blog posts. They're very insightful. And the thing is, we need to work. I mean, just for the sake of our soul, I believe we need to work. I think, and I'm not, you know, going to go biblical on you, but, you know, talk about idle hands get you into nothing but trouble. Idle mind is even worse as far as I'm concerned. So we need to work, whether it's in our own business or for somebody else's business. But, Kamanzi, don't you think that even if you're working for somebody else and you're in a job you hate, don't you think you should do the absolute best you can do? Because that trains you to be the absolute best for yourself.
Absolutely. And I think we have the attitude of not wanting to work, or, like, you know, when we come to a certain age and retiring and getting away from the quote-unquote grind, we have such a negative perception of work, and work was never, you know, you talk about biblical times, work was never supposed to be a punishment for us.
No.
You know, that's not what it's about, you know, but once you figure out, you know, how do I fit, you know, work into my life, not my life into my work, I think that makes all the difference.
Well, that makes, you know, I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, because that's how I was, and I know that's how a lot of people are, is, you know, you have your job, and it's 40 hours, and it could be 40 hours plus for a lot of us, and then that's first, and then everything else has to work around that. So, you know, like when my kids would have a play, you know, I had to figure out, well, could I go to this play, you know, if I had an early day at work? You know, I don't know if I could do that, but that's not work. What work is supposed to be about, you know, work should fit into your life.
Well, it's supposed to support your life. It's not supposed to be your life.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of people miss that. And I know what you're talking about. I mean, I'm a workaholic. I'm a straight running workaholic. I'll tell anybody who listens that I am. And for the longest kind of time, I tried not to be, but it is who I am. So what I've had to do, and I'm willing to bet you've had to do this as well as an entrepreneur, you've had to take that work ethic and that passion for work and make it work within your life, which is, it can be tricky.
Yeah, it really can.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as an entrepreneur, if you don't work, you don't eat.
That's right. And you don't go to any school plays because you don't have gas in that car.
That's right.
I know. But there is a balance, and I think a lot of what you're talking about in your blogs and your books is crafting that life and crafting that balance.
Absolutely.
Well, what is your new book about? I know you've got a new one out. Do you feel like talking about that just a little bit?
Sure, yeah. It's called Are You Living or Existing? 9 Steps to Change Your Life. And it's about everything that we're talking about. It's about not settling in life, not making excuses, not, you know, wishing for more and then never doing anything about it. But it's about, you know, figuring out a plan, and that's what the 9 steps is about. It's a plan to take action. It's about researching that plan, and then it's about doing the hard work. And then, you know, it's about falling down and making mistakes and failing sometimes, but getting back up and sticking with it and, you know, going after that life that, you know, we all deserve that life of true happiness, that life of more. And we all can get it. It's not going to be easy. And, you know, getting to this point where I am, it definitely hasn't been easy. And, you know, there's a lot of times where you want to give up and quit. But if you can persevere through it, you know, you'd be surprised at the kind of life that you can achieve.
Oh, I know. And people say, oh, I don't know if I can do that. Where would you suggest that they start if they're really miserable in their job, or they're concerned about their job being there given the economic climate that, you know, we're all living with these days? There are just so many reasons why a job may not be there tomorrow. And it may not be that you just can't stand it. It may be that the company's failing, or, you know, you're being phased out because of attrition. I mean, there are just so many reasons. What is the first step, do you think, that people should take to get their mindset kind of wrapped around, you know what, I don't have to depend on somebody else for my living, somebody else being an employer? You do. When you're a business person, you depend on a lot of people for your living. But, you know, that's a semantic. We're not going to go into that. But, you know, how do you get that? How did you make that leap, I think, is my question. How did you go from being in a job that supported you, supported your family, to say, I'm not doing this anymore?
I think first you have to figure out what it is that you want to do, you know, for your work and for your life.
Mm.
You know, what is that? You may want to leave, you know, this job, and you may want to make changes in your life, but what do you want to change to? What kind of job do you want? And for me, I was convinced that my calling was to be an event planner. And so I was all excited. You know, I tell everybody who listens, I'm going to be an event planner. And then right away, like within the first week of deciding this, I actually got a chance to put this to test because my sister was getting married, and she asked me to plan her wedding.
Nice.
Yeah.
It went well, I hope. It went well, right?
No.
I had to ask.
It went well eventually, but after a couple of days of not knowing what I'm doing, you know, I hadn't researched anything about event planning. You know, the only thing I knew about event planning was, you know, I could hold a clipboard and maybe have a headset and I could look cool. That's
and you could boss people around. Yeah.
Exactly. And it didn't even work out that way because with other family members and, you know, my other sisters and brothers, you know, everybody was the event planner. And so I didn't have any authority and it was just a train wreck.
And you jumped into the worst possible solution. Have you ever tried to tell your mother what to do? Try that.
Yep.
I dare you. Whoever's listening, try to tell your mom what to do and see how well that works out.
No,
I mean, you
was,
get cut off
a
Christmas
disaster.
Card list very quickly.
And so I figured out, yeah, this might not be what I want to do. And more than that, you know, I hadn't even thought about it. I hadn't meditated on it. I hadn't done any research. So I had to sit. For it probably took a couple months for me just to sit down and see where do I want to go and what do I want to do. And so I would tell somebody, you know, when you're starting out and you want a different job or you want to make changes, you got to figure out, you know, identify what they are
right.
and what that job is.
Right. And here's the thing. I mean, you went into event planning briefly, apparently, without having any prior experience, I'm guessing. Not even
no
as an apprentice or an intern. I mean, you just...
Nothing.
I'm sorry. I have a mental image in my head. I'll be over here laughing. You keep on talking.
Well, it looks so easy on TV.
Right, right. Listen, I have done event planning, you know, for different... I volunteer a lot and you know, just different organizations. It's not easy. It's like herding goldfish. And if you add family to the mix... Then you have pissed off goldfish. Let's just put it right there. So.
Well, why couldn't you have told me this like 2 years ago?
You didn't call me. You should have asked
yeah.
me. It takes a very analytical, very, and I'm not saying you don't have an analytical mind, but to pull this kind of thing off, you have to be very organized. And I mean very ruthlessly organized. And most people aren't.
No, and that's not me either.
Yeah. Well, you're a creative. I don't imagine it would be.
And so, yeah, so, once I figured out that that wasn't it, you know, then it was back to the drawing board.
Right.
And it just so happened that there was a lot of things going on in my job. Our company got bought up by a larger company, and then it was all about the profits and the shareholders. And while this was going on, you know, and I was actually a business owner. The way that it worked is you bought into the business, you bought a territory. It was like you were a franchise.
Mm.
But when the main company wanted what they wanted, you know, you would say no, and they would say, hey, why don't you talk to our team of lawyers over here? And so, yeah, while this was going on, I wanted to vent, but I didn't want to vent in a way where I would get in trouble. So
right.
I started just simply keeping a journal. And as I wrote in that journal, you know, I rediscovered something that I had forgotten about.
Hmm. And see, do you journal a lot? Do you still journal? Uh-oh, did we lose him? It looks like we lost him. Okay, so he'll dial back in, I'm sure, but somehow we lost the call. So what we're talking about now is how Kimanzi took... You know, just basically a job that he had, a job that he apparently was doing pretty well at, and just said, this is not for me. I'm losing too much of my family life. I am not living my dream. I'm just miserable. So there's got to be a better way to have a life. The life. Why are we living? I mean, truthfully, there's no reason for us to do what we do if we really just hate it. Certainly you have to do it for the short term. You need to put food on the table. you need to take care of your family, but you should always be looking for something that feeds your soul and feeds your creativity and that makes you happy and that makes a better life for you. And that's where Kimanzi went with his book. And I don't see him popping back up yet, but hopefully he will be soon. We've had some trouble with, he's in Wisconsin, so I'm sure that he's having some trouble with the weather there. But anyway, so in the meantime, you can go to find Kimanzi, you can go to Tales of Work, I believe it's called. Let me go find out. Tales of Work blog. Yeah, talesofwork.com. And that's Kimanzi's blog. You can also find his new books. The book, the one that we're talking about today is The Difference Between Living and Existing. You can find that on his website. You can also find it on Amazon. I believe you can find it on Amazon. And you can also go to soundwisdom.com and you can find him there. So let's see if he has managed to pop back in. And no, he has not. Well, shoot. I hate it when this happens. I really do. So, and I don't see anybody else on the switchboard that we can talk with. So let me see if I can send him an email and find out if he can jump back in. Or maybe if Michelle is listening. Michelle, if you're listening, can you dial in? Here. Well, we may. Oh, here he is. Oh, thank goodness. Kimanzi.
Yes.
I can't talk to you if you hang up on me.
I was just rattling along,
waiting for you to show back up. I assume that because you're in Wisconsin, yes?
Yes.
I'm assuming that you guys are having some storm-related difficulties, so.
Yes.
I'm glad you're back, though. Anyway, I was telling people where to find you on the internet, talking about, you know, why we make the choices that we make to go from a job to, you know, doing something that feeds our soul and feeds our family at the same time. So where did we leave off?
Through some different things at work, I had really rediscovered my love for writing.
Journaling, right.
Yep.
You know, journaling is important. Do you write in your journal, or how do you journal? And do you journal still?
I write in the journal, and yes, I still journal.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because I'm a true techie, and I journal. I've been journaling for years. But you know how I do it? Digitally. I have a digital journal. Yeah. I have a digital journal. It cost me $49 many years ago. And I love it because I can copy-paste, I can search by meta tags, I can search by dates, I can search by words, I can embed videos. And because I am a techie person, I type very fast, but I can't write as fast as I think. So that journal has stood me in good stead for many years. I can go back, you know, like you were saying before we broke off, you can go back and go, huh, really? I had forgotten about that.
Yep.
And that's important to know, you know, what was happening in your life. So you took the journal and you basically made a book out of the wisdom in your journal?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, everything that I had written about and was venting about. And, you know, I looked at it after a few weeks and I thought, this is a lot of material here.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could actually make a book out of this. And I thought, you know, how cool would that be if, you know, I put together a book of my, you know, my little experiences, and that it actually helped somebody else.
So you self-published this, didn't you?
I did self-publish.
Okay, you've got to tell me that story, because this is a very interesting story. So do you mind telling me why you self-published, how you did it, and how you sold over 70,000 copies? That's unprecedented.
I had run across, while I was doing the journaling, I had run across the story of a woman named Amanda Hawking, and she was a 19-year-old CNA from Minnesota, and she was somebody just like me. You know, she was in a job that she hated, and she loved to write. She actually wrote 17 novels by the time she was 19.
Wow.
And she was a little bit more aggressive than I was, and she had sent them to agents and to publishers and to everybody just wanting to get her books out to the world. And she was rejected by all of them. So she decided to try Amazon with self-publishing, and she didn't have a bunch of money.
The Kindle book?
Yep, Kindle book.
Uh-huh.
and she didn't have a bunch of money to spend on advertising. You know, she's 19 years old. She's not making a lot of money. So she just tapped into social media and, you know, asked some of her friends to share. And then she got some book reviewers that agreed to review the books. And, you know, mm-hmm. she didn't pay them or anything. And after a week, she had sold 456 copies of her three books, which, you know, for self-publishing and for e-books, that's impressive alone. You know,
oh, it is.
456.
Yeah.
It's hard to sell books. And after people started buying the books, word started spreading, and people started saying they liked the books. After a month, she had sold 10,000 copies.
Wow.
And she had made more money than she had ever made in her life. And so she was able to quit that job and just focus on this. And she started hitting social media harder. She started blogging. She started just getting out there. And her books just went viral. And after a six-month period, she had sold 1 million copies of her three e-books.
You're kidding me.
No.
What was your name again?
Amanda Hawking.
Okay, I'm going to look for her.
Yeah, and I had come across her story in USA Today. And then after all the publishers and the agents and everybody rejected her, then Random House came back to her and offered her $2.5 million for her three books.
Wow.
And I read her story and I thought, man, if she could sell a million copies, I should be able to easily sell at least 10,000 copies. And 10,000 copies at $4 a copy, you know, that would be a salary for a year, and that'd be more than enough money for me to quit this job that I hated.
So did you? Did you make that milestone?
I said, I'm going to do this. I hired a formatter, an editor, and a graphic designer to make my book into a real book and to put it out there to the world and, you know, get the website going. And I started hitting social media hard, just like she did. I took her playbook, and I said, I'm going to use her playbook, and I should have the same success, right? Makes sense. And so I went on social media, and I would tell everybody that this book was coming out. And I would call friends that I hadn't talked to in 10 years, and I'd tell people in the grocery store, and I would, anybody who would listen, I told them that I had a book coming out. And I thought for sure, because I'd have at least 100 sales from friends and family, because so many people had said, yeah, when your book comes out, I'm going to get it. So I'm pumped. So the day that the book actually released, I rushed through work, I got home, I logged on to Amazon expecting those 100 sales from friends and family. You know, I was going to be the next Amanda Hawking. And when I logged on, I saw a big, fat zero.
Oh, my heart just fell for you.
Oh, I was
crushed.
That
made my stomach hurt.
And I got on Google, and I thought maybe Amazon doesn't update their results in real time. And I found out from Google that they actually did. And so
they
I couldn't figure it out. What's going on here? You know, all these people told me they're getting the book. They knew when the book was coming out. What's going on? And so I got on social media. I said, hey, guys, you all said you're going to buy the book. The book's out. And I started calling people. I'm like, hey, the book's out. And I started going, as I went out to the grocery store that evening to shop with my wife, I started telling random people, like, hey, the book's out, you know?
Nice.
And when I logged back on a couple hours later, it was still a zero. When I logged on a couple hours later, it was still a zero. And as the day went on, I started getting angry. And so my post on social media, I got on there and I started telling people, you know, you guys are all fake and I don't have real friends here.
Oh, you didn't. Oh, babe.
I did.
Raise your hand. Raise one hand in the air and slap it with the other one.
Okay, I'm doing that right now.
That came up like that. That is not the way to make friends and influence people.
Well, by the end of the day, I had one person follow me on Twitter and I had like 10 friends on Facebook. they were gone.
Oh.
And I was crushed. I couldn't figure it out. I did everything Amanda did. You know, what happened here? Why wasn't I selling books? And, you know, for about 2 weeks, I didn't even touch a computer. I'm like, you know
what? Oh, you were depressed.
Yeah, so this is for somebody else. I can just do this job. I have a business. It pays well. I'm just going to stick it out here and forget about that whole computer stuff. But it was...
So when did you come back around?
Well, it was a group of, I have a close group of friends, and of course my wife, and they were just encouraging me the whole time, like, look, you know what, you didn't put 100% into this, you haven't figured out, you know, exactly how to do this, you know, get back up, figure this out, you can do this.
And well, then you were spending money in your head that you hadn't earned yet.
Exactly.
And people
yeah,
do
I was
that.
Living,
I hear this
that
all
beach.
The time. Yeah, I hear this all the time. Exactly. You know, they say, well, you know, I've done, and this is the wrong approach for all of you who are listening. If you put something out and you say, okay, you know, it's $4 and I'm going to sell 100 of them and I'll have this much money, you're not really serving the people who would be your readers or your clients. I mean, you have to really look at it from what's in it for them, because that's really what it's about. What's in it for them? Why would they buy this book? Why would they benefit from this book? And once you get past your own ego, which you did, then it starts falling into place, doesn't it?
Exactly. And for me, I had to figure out what was more important to me. You know, I love to write, and I want to spread a message. You know, was it the money or was it the message? What was more important? And I thought even if I didn't make a single dollar, I wanted to just help anybody that I could to show them that you don't have to be miserable for 40 hours of your week, and that when you are, it seeps into every other area of your life.
Oh, yeah, it's not 40. You come home, make your wife and your kids miserable, too.
Exactly, and I want to spread that message, and I want to, even though I hadn't arrived, I still want to help people, and I wanted people to share their stories, and I wanted all of us to vent together. And so I stopped looking at the numbers, you know, for a period of 2 months. I didn't even log on to Amazon. It was like, whatever. I didn't even care. And I told myself I was a writer. So I said, you're a writer. Write, okay? Mm-hmm. Write. So I started sharing, you know, my story, and I started sharing the reason why I wrote the book and where I wanted to go with my life and just some things that practical things about work, like, you know, what do you do if you lose your job? Or what do you do if you get fired? You know, what do you do right away? And I wanted people to know this is what you do if you get fired or you lose your job. Or what do you do if you have a boss that's, you know, difficult to deal with? And what do you do if you have, you know, to deal with coworkers and just different lessons from work? That's what I focused on writing. And once, you know, I took my eyes off of the sales and trying to cram it down people's throats, and I just started, you know, sharing my story, and I started talking, really talking to people. That's when they connect with the message.
Right. And because you're building relationships as opposed to just sell.
Exactly.
Which is very important because people, you know, once they start reading what you really are all about and they connect with you on social media and they understand where your heart is in this, then they're a lot more willing to go buy your product. Prior to that, they didn't know who you were and they didn't care. And I think that's where there's a disconnect in sales.
And there was, you know, practical things I could do, like strategy-wise. I knew that I didn't have any traffic to my website.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard so much about SEO and this and that. And, you know, that was all good and great, but I wanted traffic right now. So I knew one of the best ways to get traffic right now was to be featured somewhere that was larger than my website. And that was through guest posting. And so I started sending out guest posts to some of the large websites that I had read on a daily basis that helped me, like a guy like Michael Hyatt, who's the chairman of Thomas Nelson. And he has a huge following, and he's got a great blog, and I read it every day. And I thought, man, if I could get featured here, and a guy like Dan Miller, who wrote a book called 48 Days of Work You Love, which is the book that actually inspired me to finally take action. And John Acuff and Jeff Goins and some of these guys that I was reading and that had this huge following, I thought, man, I'd love to be featured here. And so I sent them posts. And the first, you know, one or two might not have hit. And I said, hey, these are good, but you need to go back here and rework this and read this. And, you know, they gave me guidance. And eventually, you know, I did guest posts for Michael Hyatt and Dan Miller and Jeff Goins and John Acuff and 15 other people, actually. I guest posted a lot. And then I started to get in traffic. And I remember the first I guest posted for Michael Hyatt on March 9th of this year. And the day that I guest posted for him, I had 23,000 unique visitors just on that first day.
There you go.
And the traffic is still coming in.
Right. And that was a brilliant move because, you know, if people don't know who you are, doing what you did was absolutely brilliant. because you know, now you have a wider audience. You had to work for it, but you didn't have to pay for it necessarily. And these people saw that you have good work. They liked what they saw, and they're willing to share it because you're now a resource for their audience.
And I think that was the key. If I had guest posted before and people had come to my website and they saw the, you know, the spamminess or the trying to just promote the book and this and that, I think they would have been instantly turned off.
They would have, trust me. Yeah, they would have. Because
so
it's
I
not
knew
about
when they
you.
Needed to come.
Yeah, your website, as a web developer, I can tell you from the heart, when people land on your website, it's not about you. Yes, you want to give information, but it's really about the visitor. What's in it for them? How can you solve a problem? How can you answer a question? How can you be a resource? It's not about you. And that's where most people make huge mistakes with their, you know, their social media marketing and their website. It's relationship building. It's not about sell, sell, sell. Yes, you want to sell. That is your ultimate goal. But you can't just pound on the front door and say, let me in. You have to become, you know, you have to be identifiable to them. You have to be kind of a friend. You have to be somebody that they recognize, and when they're ready, they'll buy.
And we have enough, you know, websites out there and companies that, you know, don't really care about you, don't want to make that real connection, so we don't need any more.
And that's apparent. Yeah, people just, they twist away from that. So once you started these guest posting, then you went out, and I know you're working with Sound Wisdom. How did that come into play? Because, I mean, if you don't mind, we'll back up just a bit, and if you can tell me the steps, kind of, that you took, I mean, from journaling to creating a book to getting it on Amazon, which we've already covered, and then finding out that you had left out some very important steps in between. Do you mind kind of walking us through the steps you took to get where you are now?
Yeah, it started with, you know, wanting more, and this was 2 years ago, and, you know, I was all fired up for about 2 weeks, and then I justified it. I made excuses, and I went back into the grind. And it was actually 1 year, it was a year ago, when unfortunately it was some deaths in my family that had really woke me up to the fact of how short life is.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, even though I hadn't accomplished anything, that was, you know, that was bad to me. But the fact that I hadn't even tried to accomplish anything is what really got to me. And so I said enough was enough. And then that's when the company I worked for got bought out by a larger company. I started keeping this journal. Then I ran across the story of Amanda Hawking, and, you know, I got the confidence I could do this. I tried to do it, and I failed. I sold 5 copies in the first 2 months. And I
was just
crushed.
Yeah, that would be disappointing. Yeah.
But then I figured out my messaging was wrong. I figured out I didn't have any traffic to my website. Nobody knew I was alive. And I wasn't making any real connections, and I wasn't networking. So I went back, and then I started guest posting to get the traffic. Once the people came, I knew that they needed more than what they normally see. So I started focusing on the story and the message, and they connected. And people then bought books. And once they bought books and they read it and they said, hey, you know, this guy wrote a book and it doesn't suck, you know, and they started putting it on social media.
Sorry. Okay, keep going. I'm fine.
They started putting that on social media, and, you know, it's kind of like a viral effect. Once, you know, I could tell your friend to buy a book, and he will just ignore me. But if you tell your friend, hey, this book is worth looking at, they're going to at least take a look.
Right.
And once people came to the site and I identified with my message and they identified with, you know, wanting more for their life, you know, a few more people bought the book. And before I knew it, you know, at the end of 2 months, you know, I had sold, it was something like 8,000 copies.
Whoa.
And yeah, when I logged back onto Amazon for the first time after a couple of months, I'm like, what's going on here, you know? And I thought, that's great. But then when I actually got the check from Amazon, that's when it became real. I'm like, wow, this is really happening.
Now
so
let's keep it going.
And then that's when I self-published a manifesto because, you know, I wanted to make changes in my life, and I had tried and failed, or I tried and given up. And so that's what the manifesto was all about, was just me screaming to the world that I'm going to stop talking about it and I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put it out there in a public way. And then that was the prequel to my second book that I actually had self-published. And that was called, you know, The Difference Between Living and Existing, A 9-Month Plan to Radically Change Your Life. And so that second book came out, and people that had bought the first book, you know, the day that the second book came out, I had sold 5,400 copies. You know,
wow.
It was a lot different than the first time. But this time around, I had made real connections, and more than that, I had networked online with other bloggers and other influencers, just people that I met along the way that we were like-minded spirits, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we formed like a little mini association. And so when the second book came out, I just said, hey, can you simply share this link? And the day the book came out, it was something like 20 or 25 bloggers had written reviews and shared the book.
Right.
And so that definitely helped it with visibility. And those were relationships that I had built.
Exactly. And I'm glad you said that. But let me ask you this. I'm assuming that you sent advanced copies of the book to all of these 25 bloggers, yes?
I did.
Okay, good. Because that's
an
important step that people don't do. And it's very important because you can't ask somebody to review a book they have not read. And trust me, it happens. I'm always like,
it happens. It happens to me.
You've got to be kidding me. But it does happen. So that's a very important step, too. I don't know why anybody would think to say, and they do it on LinkedIn, can you, I get these all the time. Can you go ahead and, give me a referral? I don't know you. No. There's a short answer. The long answer I won't repeat here.
I heard a woman at a conference that I was speaking at in Hawaii, she actually said this. She said that the reason it doesn't work is because the ask is not relative to the relationship. And she
right.
gave the example. There was a guy sitting in the audience, and this is going to be bad, but I'm going to keep it PG-13. She said there was a guy sitting in the audience. She's like, hey, what's your name? And he's like, my name is Mike. He's like, hey, Mike. Now I know your name is Mike, right? She's like, yeah. She's like, hey, Mike, can you come up here and kiss me? And everybody's like, what? And she's like, you see, the ask is not relative to the relationship.
I bet he thought about it, though.
Yeah, his whole face was red. It was funny.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that is brilliant.
Yeah,
that
you don't know somebody
brilliant.
And I'm sure you get that, Denise, where people will say, hey, yeah, can you refer? Or, hey, can you endorse this book? Or, hey, can you do this?
Constantly.
It's like, hi, who are you?
Yeah. I get a lot more of it than what I'm very puzzled by. I get a lot of it. And, I will write back and say, I'm sorry, I just don't know you. Well, we met on LinkedIn. I'm sorry, I just don't know you. We have never interacted. The answer's no. But thank you for asking.
And
so you have to build up
those
relationships.
And I had a woman the other day who emailed me her book. She had lost 170 pounds.
Whoa.
And she had kept it off for 10 years. And she said, I wrote a book about it. I could identify with your story of wanting to lose weight, and I just wanted to give this to you. And I thought that was awesome. And I read the
mm-hmm.
book, and the book was awesome. And I'm more than happy then to say, hey, I read this book. It's awesome. Let me write a review of it.
Right, exactly. I know Susan Barancini Moe has a new book coming out, and she sent me an advance copy, asked me to review it. It's fabulous. I'm happy. She's a friend of mine. We connect an awful lot on social media. We've done some things together. Absolutely, I'll read that book. Yeah, and I get a lot of those, and those are the ones I'm like, sure. But if I've never heard of you, please don't. Please don't do it.
And
those are the rules. Just don't.
And if you're an aspiring author and you got an ebook and you want to do what I did and you have a network or some friends or something you want them to review, not only did I send them the book, but I also gave away free copies for them to give to their readers as well.
Very nice. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, you give a couple books away, they can give two to their readers and create a little contest. And they say something like, you got to share it on social media, then you're getting exposure.
Right, exactly right. So I know I interrupted you, and I'm so sorry, but this is fascinating. So we got partway through the steps, so continue on.
So the second book came out it sold well. You know, between both books at this point, I think I was somewhere around 30,000 copies. And I had gone to, in April of this year, I had gone to a Brendan Burchard conference. Are you familiar with Brendan Burchard?
Yes, I am. I was supposed to go to his conference in October. My schedule would not make it, but yes, I'm a student of his.
Yes, and so I went to his conference in New York. It's called 10X Empire. And one of the things Brendan does that I absolutely love is he forces you to network. So he'll stand up in between sessions or at lunchtime or at dinner, and he'll say, you know, I don't care who you came with. When you have lunch, when you have dinner, when we have break times, I want you to talk to somebody that you don't know at all.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them who you are, why you're here, or tell them about yourself. He forces you to network that way. And it
and
was that one of
the difficult for some people to do, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And
it's difficult
I'm a shy
for me.
Person.
Me too. Well, I'm not shy, but I'm an introvert. And if I'm in a crowd, like at a church or a funeral or something, trust me, I'm the brunette by the door, way back at the back, because I want out. And, you know, when they say, okay, turn to your neighbor and shake hands, I'm like, nope, I'm out of here. So, there are people like me who just don't want to network physically, you know, in a setting.
And
like
I'm with you. And, you know, I came there with a friend. And I'm telling my friend, let's just stick together. My friend's like, no, we got to meet new people. I'm like, no.
No. We need to meet. We're so much alike.
So, you know, actually, I don't think I saw him much that conference at all. You know, we shared a hotel room. We saw each other at night. But he was out there mingling. And I'm like, man, you know what? I should mingle too. So
room
I was
service.
Sitting
room service
at
is
dinner.
Good.
I was sitting at dinner one night, and I'm with, you know, this whole table of people I don't know, and sitting next to me is this guy named Nathan. And so, you know, I start telling about myself and my ebook journey and the failure, and then eventually, you know, getting to the point where I sold 30,000 copies. And he's like, hey, that's interesting. He's like, yeah, my name is Nathan. I'm the publisher at Sound Wisdom. And I said, you're a publisher? Interesting.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, you know, I hit it off with Nathan there. And even besides meeting Nathan, who now he's gone on to be promoted. He's actually the president of Destiny Imaging, which is the parent company of Sound Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the big shot now. But even besides meeting him, I had met several publishers at that conference. And I had gotten cards, and I just shared my story. And 2 weeks after I got back, you know, I guess in the interim, I had jumped back into normal life, not thinking anything of it. But some of those publishers had actually gone and they had actually looked me up and looked up what I was doing and this and that. And, you know, 2 weeks later, I'd gotten my first publishing offer in the mail. And I said, what? You know, I thought somebody was punking me. I'm like, you know, what is this? This can't be real. And then, you know, like it was a few days after that, it was another offer from another one of the publishers that I met.
Wow.
And I thought, you know what? This is unbelievable. Like, I literally don't believe this. You know, I had to call their offices to make sure it was legit and it wasn't a scam.
Mm. Your cousin had done this to you.
Yeah, and I was Googling. But,
right.
You know, I came back to Nathan and to what we talked about and how he ran Sound Wisdom, and I just, I couldn't shake that. And so I emailed him. I'm like, Nathan, you know, I can't shake the conversation we had. Would you be interested in looking at my work? And he said, absolutely. So I sent him my books, and he sent me a contract.
That is amazing. So now, of course, you're working with Michelle Cullen.
Yep, who
Duncan.
Is the best woman in the world. Or one
yeah,
of
she'll
the best
be on my show soon. Yeah, she'll be on my show one day soon. And she's introduced me to a lot of great authors with Sound Wisdom. I mean, I'm fascinated with Sound Wisdom. So you crafted through being in the right place in the right time and being willing and able and have already done the groundwork to get your book and your message out there. How did you get into speaking? Because that's a whole nother area, isn't it? I mean, you know, the two don't always go hand in hand.
Well, no, and I'm shy. So, you know, after the book deal was announced by Sound Wisdom, they put out the press release. I actually got contacted by a conference in West Virginia, a social media conference, and they said, hey, we see what you're doing, you know, how you use social media to sell these books. And during this time, you know, books kept selling. you know, I signed with Sound Wisdom, but, you know, I'm still selling the books on my website. So during
right.
this time, you know, the books continue to sell. And so this conference in West Virginia said, hey, would you be willing to come out and talk about, you know, how you did all this? And I said, no, I can't. I'm not speaking in front of people.
Me either.
For that.
Like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm the same way.
But,
I've had people say, you know, we need for you to come, you know, get in front of our conference. No. There's no more discussion.
And they said the magic words. Well, they said, you know what, we're going to cover your expenses and we're going to pay you. I said, okay, now I'm thinking about it. And, you know,
so how did it go? How was that first one?
Well, you know, my friends told me you got to do this, and I knew it was another way to spread the message. And so I'm walking up to the stage, and as I'm walking up to the stage, I turn back around, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going home. I'm not doing this.
I have a cartoon in my head. I was just so nervous. Oh, my gosh.
And it, actually, if you go to my website right now, the video is on there of that very first conference that I spoke at. And,
oh boy.
You know, I thought it went well. You know, once I got up there, you know, it just felt right. It felt natural. And I thought, man, this is awesome. And even on the flight there and the flight back, and people are like, so what are you going to West Virginia for? And I, you know, look at them and say, I'm going to speak at a conference. And they're like, oh, you're a speaker? And I'm like, sure.
I am now.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so once I got the first conference, I knew this was something I wanted to do, so I started actively seeking out conferences online. And once I found them, I said, hey, this is who I am. This is what I've done with social media, and I've spoken at this conference. I'd love to come share my experience with your conference. And a few of them said no, and a few of them said yes. And so, you know, the second conference I spoke at was in New York. I was back in New York again, which was awesome. And, you know, once I got the first few, the next like nine kind of just fell into place, you know, because I could say, hey, this is what I've done, and I'm booked at these conferences. And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll have you come out. Then at that point, it was just about, you know, negotiating for the fee.
Right. So how long did all this take? I mean, you went from having a job, which we haven't discussed how you got out of that or if you did, to becoming a really successful self-published writer, to a writer that is now published with a genuine house, to being a speaker. What happened with your job?
It was a slow process of, you know, I was dumb when I was younger, so I had incurred a lot of debt. You know, I did some dumb things, like when I was 18, I financed a $55,000 fully loaded Nissan Armada, you know, at 18
what?
Years old.
Who in the world let you do that?
Me.
No, I mean
actually,
the person on the other side of the loan. Who?
This was back in the days of, anybody could get a loan.
Yeah, well, I don't miss those days, I have to say.
Yeah, and so
wow.
You know, the payment on that car was actually $1,200 a month. You want to talk about that?
I have a Range Rover, and I don't even pay that. Wow.
Somebody
saw you coming.
I had a lot of debt from dumb decisions, so it was a process of first paying off this debt and making sure we were financially stable and had a savings, and, you know, so that if the books dried up and if I didn't have any speaking, at least you wouldn't have any bills. So it was a slow process of, you know, getting the debt paid off and then transitioning out.
So how long did that take? I mean, once you sat down and you made your financial plan, which is, again, such an important part of being an entrepreneur, you have to have that financial basis in play. If you don't, you're shooting BB guns. I mean, that's all you're doing. You're just
exactly.
scattershotting all over the place. And, you know, if you don't have a plan, if you don't have a profit and loss, if you don't have a tax account, you have to get these things into place. So what happened? I mean, how long did it take
it was,
you to get all of this?
It was an eight-month process.
That's all? That's excellent.
It seemed like forever.
Yeah, I know it does. But, you know, you said 8 months. Why? That leads me back to another question. Why a nine-month plan?
Because the nine-month plan is, once you've arrived, it's the 9 month plan. The actual title of the ninth month is pay it forward, give it back. Once you've arrived, help somebody else.
Right. So basically, you took your 8 months and, you know, kind of shared that with the world, and then the 9th month you can relax and help other people. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Because the whole point of me writing the book and the plan, the whole point is not just about, yeah, you want to change your life, and yes, you want more, but, you know, I'm trying to start a movement of people that are just not going to settle.
Right.
And so once you get to that 9 month, you know, you're joining the movement and you're helping other people out, and you know, we're waking people up everywhere.
I love that. So I had another question. I'm trying to think what it was. I have, seriously, come on, say, will you come back? I'm not done with you.
Absolutely.
I have so many questions for you. I had this whole list, and I maybe, you know, got two of them that I actually got to, because yours is a fascinating story. So are you still working at your job, or are you now a true, you know, entrepreneur?
I'm a true entrepreneur.
How long has that been happening for you?
3 months.
Good for you. Excellent. I mean, you know, this to me, this kind of story is just so engaging for starters, but really inspirational. It does tell you that you can do it. And, you know, you don't, I'm listening to a lot of your story, and being a web developer and a VA OBM, I know what it takes to make a lot of this work, but it doesn't have to be incredibly expensive. And it sounds to me like you did an awful lot of this on your own.
Yeah, because I didn't have the money from the dumb financial decisions. I mean, I just didn't have the money to do, you know, do everything I wanted to do.
So my point is that you can do something like this without mortgaging the house and without, you know, having to go get a small business loan. And, I mean, you can do so much of this all by yourself, or hire a VA, or, you know, bring in people who can, you know, just really help you. But you don't have to spend every penny you've got to get out of your job to go live the life you want. Is that, was that true for you?
No, it's, yeah, as long as you understand that, it, you know, it's not a race, it's a marathon, and you're going to have a lot of patience.
Well, it's a lifestyle. It's, you don't just go, well, okay, here I am at 9 months, I don't have to do this anymore. You do. You have to do it every day. Yeah, I mean, you're an entrepreneur every day.
Well, yeah, because there was quite a few times when I got some pretty nice checks, and I'm like, okay, now I can quit. But then I'm like, no, this is what you've done in the past. You got to do it a different way. You got to do it a better way.
So you had to change your mind about how you'd been living.
Exactly.
Right. Well, we are getting close to out of time. Who is this book written for? I mean, do you did you have a specific audience? I mean, the most recent book that we're talking about, did you have a specific audience, or is this just from your heart and anybody who wants to read it should read it?
I wrote this for the person that feels like they're stuck and that they have no other options, that they, you know, like, I don't have a college degree and I don't have any special skills, you know, so what could I do? And that's the kind of, you know, person I wanted to talk to, was, you know, somebody that just feels like they don't have any other options, or they got too much debt, or, you know, they're too old, or, you know, they're too overweight. I just want to help that person that just feels stuck in their life, and I want to show them that you're not stuck. There is another way.
I love that. Can we talk about the weight loss? Because 132 pounds is substantial.
Absolutely, yeah.
What prompted you to do that? Because, I mean, was it the deaths in your family? What prompted you to go on that journey?
No, you know, I was the best man at my brother's wedding, and when we went to go try on the tuxes, I couldn't fit any of the tuxes. And then when we took the pictures and I saw the wedding pictures, just to be perfectly honest, when I saw those pictures, I cried when I saw how large I was. And so I wanted to do something about it, and I was determined. So I started hitting the gym. I started doing 4 hours a day of cardio, and I was only eating 1,200 calories a day. I only ate one time a day. And so I lost.
You went on your own Biggest Loser thing, didn't you?
I did, and it was
that
extreme.
TV show? Whoa.
Yep.
Wow. How did you find 4 hours, Kamanzi? I mean, how did you find 4 hours a day?
Before work and after work.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty extreme, and I lost 132 pounds in 8 months.
Good Lord.
But
were
the
you
problem
healthy?
was I didn't learn, like you said, it's the lifestyle, so I didn't learn what it meant to be healthy. And so after I lost the weight, you know, I started slacking. And even while I was losing the weight, you know, I was always tired. I was always cranky. And I didn't learn how to do it the right way. So, yeah, sure enough, within a year's time, I gained it all back and some.
Oh, my. What did that do with here's been my experience in life. If my weight gets a little bit out of control, my brain doesn't function. Seriously, it doesn't. I get tired. You know, because my body is tired, my brain gets tired, my creativity goes out the window. So I find to just stay on top of my game, I've got to be healthy.
You're right. And, you know, your discipline and everything else. And, yeah, once I started getting the weight, that's when, you know, other areas of my life start to slip. And so, you know, now I'm on the process where, you know, I'm going to the gym, you know, an hour a day, and we're going to the Y as a family so the kids can swim and I can work out with my wife. And then now it's about healthy eating and really learning what it means to eat healthy. And so now I'm at a point where I'm losing, you know, 2 to 4 pounds a week, you know, just something a little bit more realistic. And sometimes, you know, it's only 1 pound, and that sucks. Compared to how I lost it before, where I would, you know, go on the scale and see I lost, you know, 12 pounds in 1 week. It sucks.
Whoa.
But
that's not healthy, though, is it?
No, it's not healthy at all. But I know this is a smarter way and a healthier way.
Right. Right. I'll tell you one thing I've done, just, and this is way off topic, but I bought a Nutribullet some months ago, and I'm telling you, I love that thing. Have you ever heard of those?
No.
The Nutribullet? I'm trying to, David. Oh, gosh, I can't remember his name. I'll email you. But he's known as, he's got an infomercial, which I don't even know why I stumbled across this. I don't watch much TV. But one of my clients in the UK is an ardent follower of this guy, David Cash something. But anyway, he came up with this Nutribullet. And I'm telling you, I mean, I will stick a pear, an apple, an avocado, some goji berries, and some water in this thing, and I drink it, and I feel wonderful because instead of juicing, it's actually taking everything and just pulping it more or less. And you're getting, I mean, just massive nutrients. I love the thing. If I forget or go a day or two without having a NutriBlast, what they call it, I feel it. I really do. My brain slows down. I get tired. I catch myself eating garbage. So I'll email you. It cost me, I think, $100,
yeah,
and I wouldn't do without
that.
I would not be without that thing. I have a juicer, but it's too expensive and it's too messy. This thing's a killer. Anyway, we are just about out of time. One more time, can you tell people where to find you?
You can find me at talesofwork.com, or you can go to Kimanzi Constable, which is KimanziConstable.com. And like I said, you can read my writing there, or at the top you can see all my social media links. And yeah, don't be a stranger. If you feel stuck, if you know, want to tell me your story, I love to hear people's stories. If you want to ask advice, whatever it is, I'm here to help. And so feel free to ask away or to tell me your story or anything. Let's connect. That's what this is all about.
Excellent. Well, listen, when is your book going to be available in stores?
In May. The book comes out in May, and
not in time for Christmas?
No, not in time for Christmas.
Oh,
it's a little different when you go with a traditional publisher from self-publishing.
Yeah, it is. Well, listen, I want to go back. Yeah, and congratulations. I think that is amazing. I do need to ask you, though, since you know you're 3 months away from your job, how have you been living since writing the book? What has changed? I mean, and I don't mean just financially. I mean, you're able to spend more time with your family. How have things changed? What's your life like?
You know, it's all about value and freedom. You know, I have the freedom to do what I want to do, like you said, with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm providing value. Like this year, my wife and I are homeschooling our kids.
Good.
Have to, but because we want to, and we've connected with them in a way that we've never connected with them, you know, and we're learning so much about them, And that's been awesome. And, you know, like a couple weeks ago, I went to speak in Hawaii. I brought my wife with me. You know, she came to see me speak in Hawaii, and we had a vacation after that. So just stuff like that has just been a dream come true.
And you wanted to move there, aren't you?
We are moving there, yeah, next year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, your story is amazing, and I definitely want you to come back after the first of the year. We're not done here. I still have many, many, many questions. So listen, Kamanzi, thank you so much for being here. I know you've got a busy day, and I really appreciate you being here this morning.
No, I love what you're doing, and I love the message that you're spreading. So please keep spreading this. It's really helping a lot of people.
Will do. It's my pleasure. Well, listen, this is Denise Griffiths and Kamanzi Constable wishing you a wonderful weekend. And I will see you next week. Thank you.